Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:13 Pacific Summer Time, and today is June 30th, the end of the month. Well, it's been an eventful month, particularly in soft commodities, where you've seen corn, soybeans, and wheat pulling back practically on consecutive days. But at the end of the month, you have the biggest downward dynamic that we've seen in at least some of their cases in nearly 2 years. Well, if you see a big downward dynamic following a big rally, you would say, oh, well, that's probably some people taking profits, that's an exhaustion of demand, supplies coming in at that area. But when you see a big downward dynamic following an accelerating decline, it's generally a sign that you're getting a little bit of exhaustion, that you're getting capitulation in terms of those that are the last holdouts in terms of the downtrend, so that the trend accelerates, and you often get the biggest downward dynamic at the end of a major decline. In fact, you often see the same thing following a big advance, that you see that the buying is finally exhausted with a big surge to the upside, and that there's nobody left to buy, so that you often see the biggest dynamic at the top of the trend, or at least close to the top of the trend. Well, that's an hypothesis. What we really need to see is, some of these grains and beans finished off their lows in here today. Well, an upward dynamic tomorrow would begin to give some credence to the hypothesis that we're going to see some short covering here. What we've definitely seen is that there has been a rotation out of the soft and agricultural commodities and into the industrial metals and energy. Well, the industrial metal complex is bouncing in here. Zinc is pressuring the upper side of an almost 2-year range. Nickel, having had this explosive breakout, has consolidated and is just looking like it is coming back, or demand is coming back in. Tin, which is heavily reliant on Indonesia. Well, the Indonesians don't look like they're about to relax their ban on exports of ore. So that is a fundamental support for the tin market. Well, the dollar was weak in here today. And not just against some of the major currencies, but it is worth pointing out some of that relative strength. Well, the pound is up to 171. It was up by 77 ticks in here today. That's an impressive performance, and it's breaking above this 170 area. Well, of course, the Bank of England has been talking about that they're getting ready to raise interest rates. Well, that would be one of the first major central banks to do so, and people are betting that they're going to follow through. Well, that's a driver for demand for the pound. Well, the pound has got this very bullish pattern against not just the US dollar, but a range of other currencies, and not least against the rand. Well, it's up to, I'm going off of memory here, but about 18 to 19 relative to the rand, and that's really pressuring a spike high that we saw during the financial crisis, but this is a much more consistent advance, and there's absolutely nothing to question that it isn't going to move higher here against a comparatively weak currency like the rand. Well, the euro was a little bit firmer in here today. It's up to almost 137 here, and well, the Aussie dollar was pretty much unchanged. What we are seeing, though, is that the dollar was weak in here today. And a number of the Asian currencies were firm. Well, the Chinese renminbi was a bit firmer in here today, and so were a number of the ASEAN markets. Well, the Asian dollar index was a bit firmer as well. Well, that dollar weakness has been a bit of a tailwind for the precious metals. Gold was stronger by $11 in here today and finished pretty much close to the upper side of its range for the day. But it's pulling away from that 1300 area. Well, that's also the region of the 200-day moving average. If gold has been pretty much range-bound for the last year between $1,200 and $1,400, well then, the potential that it has now put in a higher reaction low and that it is probably going to get back up to the upper side of that range at least has been lent some additional credibility in here today. Well, silver, which had that explosive rally in the last 2 weeks, has paused in the region of $21. Well, it was as low today as 20.76, and it closed out the day at 21.05. Well, that's just a little bit down on the day, so it's recouped the entire decline. And, well, there isn't any real evidence that this is anything other than a little consolidation here in the, again, in the region of the 200-day moving average. But in the case of silver, this is also the progression of lower rally highs, and that lower rally high progression has been in evidence now for nearly 2 years. Well, if we start to see that taken out, well, there's been an awful lot of pretty bearish commentary going around about the precious metal complex. Well, that's going to be challenged. Well, the next, well, when you see that there is this commonality between the industrial metal complex and the precious metal complex, you have to look for a reason. And potentially that is the rehypothecation scandal that's going on in particularly centered around Qingdao port in China. Well, there was a lot of shenanigans going on in there, and it overstated the Chinese imports of those metals. But, well, the end consumers that had had collateral posted, well, they still want that metal, so that's creating demand for them once more. So we saw a sharp pullback in May, and now we're starting to see things starting to turn around once more. Well, that's probably enough about the metal markets. The oil market was a little bit softer in here today, and Brent was down more than WTI. Well, you have ISIL or declaring a caliphate in the portion of Iraq that they have captured, but of course that's the portion of Iraq that doesn't have any oil. I think they'll probably have a much more difficult time capturing any more of it. And, well, we haven't seen any threat to the oil infrastructure. Well, the Western powers have been pretty slow about intervening, but well, obviously they would have to step up their participation if there was any real threat to the oil infrastructure. There is certainly geopolitical risk out there, but we haven't seen any concrete risk. Well, if we were to see a direct threat to that oil infrastructure, then the possibility of an oil spike would become non-trivial. Well, in stock markets, well, the S&P finished out the day pretty much unchanged at 1960. It's still a pretty consistent advance, and it continues to edge up towards that 2000 area. Well, in terms of percentages, that's probably not an awful lot. At this stage, it's only about 2%. But 2000 represents a big psychological level. Well, we're more than 4 years into a cyclical bull market, and, well, if you're buying today, you know you're not early. You'd really have to be pretty convinced that the central banks are going to continue to increase their monetary easing. Well, you might be right in that assumption, but probably not in the case of the Bank of England, and probably less so in the case of the Fed. Well, there's been a lot of people betting that the Fed is in absolutely no way going to remove their quantitative easing. That the fact that they've been tapering the quantitative easing in the face of the Treasury issuing less bonds has actually been a net positive in terms of the amount of monetary stimulus that has been added to the economy. Well, that's helped to sustain the bull market on Wall Street. We don't yet know exactly what the Fed is going to do, and they probably don't know themselves either. But what they are doing is they're attempting to prepare the market for an eventual very, very gradual normalization of interest rates. Well, a lot of people were positioned in the fixed income markets for a swifter normalization of interest rates, and we've seen that the rallies that have been going on in the fixed income markets have been because people simply can't wait around any longer. They have cash that needs to be invested. And, well, that's the paradox of fixed income, that there's a lot of people that they need to be invested regardless of whether they think it's a good idea or not. And, well, from the perspective of someone who's sitting on the sidelines and thinking, well, is this the best asset class to be in? Well, then it's probably not the best asset class to be in, considering that the risk that one is taking on. But if you're in fixed income, you probably don't have much of a choice in the matter. And, well, when we look at the spreads, they might be back to where they are in 2007, but we don't have any evidence yet that they're about to start widening out once more. Well, there was a lot of people had very difficult talks with their clients at the end of last year because they were not fully invested. Well, this year they absolutely have to be fully invested because they're going to risk, well, they have career risk if they're not fully invested. Well, that has helped to sustain the rallies that we've had in some of these bonds. But realistically, when you look at the total return indices, then what we're presented with is a major loss of momentum. Well, we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend last year. Well, that was a type 2 top characteristic, and now we're getting this right-hand extension, which suggests that we're going to get type 3 topping activity. Well, type 3 topping activity is defined by ranging time and size, as we teach at the chart seminar. And, well, ranging, we're getting plenty of that. Time, it is going to spend a lot of time up here, and size, it's going to be very volatile. Well, that's exactly what we're getting. We're getting powerful rallies both, and we're getting some pretty swift declines when the markets turn around. And, well, major bull markets don't end with a whimper. They end with a major war between supply and demand, and that really does look like what we're getting. Well, when you look at stock markets in that light, then the Dow has been has paused in the region of 16,800. The Nasdaq has continued to be a relative strength leader. And, well, it's probably worth taking a look at the Nasdaq on a 20-year basis because, well, the peak for the Nasdaq 100 was briefly above 4,000 and the index is currently at 3,849. Well, if you had asked anybody back in 2008 what is the likelihood that the Nasdaq will get right back up and test its 2000 bubble peak, well, you probably wouldn't have had very many takers, but it remains a relative strength leader, and it is another index that is slowly but surely advancing towards a major psychological level. Well, even the biggest bull would have to be thinking that you're going to get some form of consolidation in the region of a major psychological peak. So this isn't the time to become progressively bullish, even though we're still presented with broadly consistent patterns. And that, considering that they are consistent, that the worst you could anticipate is that you're going to get a reversion to the mean. Well, in some cases, that would be in the region of about 10%. And, well, if we see any kind of change to the broad macro environment, it could be somewhat higher than that. But in the absence of clear downward dynamics, then you'd have to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, when you look at around the world, then, a number of European markets have pulled back in the last couple of weeks. Well, they've unwound their overbought conditions relative to their respective 200-day moving averages. Well, the UK is probably additionally worthy of mention, not least because it has this dominant position as the Eurozone's financial hub. Well, the FTSE 350 Banks Index has been declining, and it's broken to new reaction lows, and this has been a pretty accelerated advance. Well, part of the reason for that is that because a number of the banks are being targeted for fines because of the kind of nefarious business practices that they've been engaged in for the last, it's probably accurate to say decades. Well, Barclays pulled back really quite sharply on Thursday. It was steady on Friday and it was additionally weak in here today. Well, Lloyds is probably the bank that has the least international exposure. And it is the one that has probably fallen the least, but it really does need to find support now in the region of the 200-day moving average. But when you look at, for example, HSBC, then it's hard to get excited about it, that it's right back here at its lows for the year. And it's been declining and held a progression of lower rally highs for almost a year. Well, this isn't particularly encouraging. And we always look at the banking sectors. We want to see that banks are doing well. Well, banks are liquidity providers, and banks should be doing well in an abundant liquidity situation. Well, the Eurozone is certainly producing abundant liquidity, and the Bank of Japan is very much engaged in quantitative easing. The UK banks are, well, they're not performing in here at present. They're underperforming the wider market. And, that's not a positive sign. Well, at the beginning of the audio, we talked about the fact that the pound is outperforming and that the Bank of England may be the central bank that raises interest rates first. I wonder, is the banking sector reflecting a little bit of fear that might have some form of an impact on the UK economy? Well, that's probably going to remain an open question. But I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.